The following paid program does not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of the staff and management of Tri-Scepter Productions or the Superhuman Channel. Tri-Scepter Productions and the Superhuman Channel are not responsible for any claims, warranties, or guarantees made during this program.
Prepare to experience the strongest radio allowable by law. Secrets will be revealed. Myths dispelled.
From the studio gym where excuses never apply.
It's Superhuman Radio with your host, Carl Lenore.
Hey, hey, welcome back to Superhuman Radio. I'm going to be banging two of my favorite drums today, one of them about the food in this country, if you can call it food any longer. And the second half of the show, we're going to be talking about more information about cholesterol and how it is really not an indicator of the dangers of heart disease that the medical orthodoxy would like us to believe. My first guest is going to be Marion Nessel. And she is the author of a book called Pet Food Politics. We'll start that interview in just a second. A couple announcements I have to make. First of all, I just want to remind everybody that you can join the Superhuman Radio newsletter, which goes out and gives previews of upcoming shows by going to superhumanradio.com and clicking the little newsletter banner and putting your information. We never share your information. We only send you emails about the show and about coupon codes and all sorts of stuff like that. Secondly, a sponsor of the show, Orbit Nutrition, is running a special on the Genomics product line, which includes Slinsane, which is an insulin mimetic, which will help you stay lean while building muscle because it will partition nutrients into muscle instead of fat. And also Protocol, which is a pre and intra workout drink that will help you tirelessly, effortlessly get through your most arduous workouts and have the greatest degree of production out of those workouts. Visit orbitnutrition.com today and learn more about the Genomics product line. My guest this first hour is Marion Nessel. She has authored way too many books for me to recite at the top of this show, but I'll let her tell you about them a little bit later in the interview. But we're talking today about a book that she authored called Pet Food Politics. Welcome to the show, Marion.
Oh, glad to be here.
Now, first of all, you've written about nutrition, food, and so on in the past. What made you shine the light on pet food?
Well, it actually came out of my last book in 2006. I published a book called What to Eat, which is about how to make choices about food. And in order to do that, I used supermarkets as an organizing device. And I wrote the book going through supermarkets aisle by aisle and talking about the different issues that arise as you come up in each of those different sections of the supermarket. And that book came out in 2006. And while I was doing it, I was doing a lot of research in supermarkets, great big ones. And there was always this one section of the food aisle that I just didn't know anything about, and that was the pet food aisle.
Hmm.
And I would go up and down the pet food aisle, and it takes up an enormous amount of supermarket real estate, meaning that it's a very profitable product.
Right.
And I would look at the labels, and I couldn't understand them. They're not like human food labels, and I really just found them entirely baffling.
Especially when you see an ingredient like crude ash.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's like you don't find that in human food, that's for sure.
Well, it's not one of those.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
But my partner in life is a former animal nutritionist, now retired from Cornell. That's Malden Nesheim, who's my co-author on this book. And he would pick up the cans. He knew exactly what they were. He understood completely how to read the labels, what the ingredients were, where they came from. I mean, he had been trained in that. And so when I published What to Eat without putting in a chapter about pet food, which I regretted very much, it occurred to me that if I didn't know this, other people probably didn't know it either, and that this would be a fun project for us to do together, and that's what we did.
Now, what was it that you discovered? What you discovered really kind of turned our thoughts towards China as a supplier of food products on its ear, didn't it?
Well, It was just such a coincidence because we got a contract to start working on this book in February 2007. And in 3 weeks later, there was this enormous recall of pet food products. Just a staggering recall where it turned out that a company in Canada was manufacturing 95 different brands of pet food. That in itself was a revelation. We had no idea. And there was this massive recall of pet food that was killing cats and dogs. And everything about it just was completely stunning to us. I mean, we couldn't believe that. We had no idea that a single pet food manufacturer could be making so many products. We had no idea that the ingredients in pet food came from China as this thing emerged. We really had no idea that nobody counted the number of cats and dogs that were dying as a result of this.
Really?
That there was no system for evaluating the health of pets. And I saw this as a food safety problem that was so horrendous. If this was happening to dogs and cats, it could certainly happen to people. And, of course, 6 months after my book on it, Pet Food Politics, came out, I got distracted from writing the book of writing Feed Your Pet Right, and I just started writing about the recall because it seemed like such a dramatic and amazing story about a failure in our country's food safety system that I ended up publishing that book first.
What was it that was killing the pets that was coming out of China initially?
Well, there's an ingredient in pet food called wheat gluten, which is a completely reasonable ingredient. It's the protein that's extracted from wheat after the starch has been washed away. And it turned out that no company in America is making that product anymore because it's too expensive. And so it's all been outsourced to other countries. And most of the wheat gluten was then coming from China. And what some unscrupulous Chinese producers were doing was, instead of using wheat gluten, they were actually using regular wheat flour and adding to it a compound called melamine, which is a byproduct of the making of plastic dinnerware. And this byproduct is very high in nitrogen, and it fools tests for protein into thinking that there's a lot of protein there when there isn't. And
oh,
so they were
goodness.
Adulterating wheat gluten with melamine. They probably had been doing that for decades, but they got greedy and started adding more melamine to it. And melamine itself isn't toxic, but when it combines with one of its own byproducts, it forms crystals, and those crystals are too big for cats and dogs to excrete, and it blocks their kidneys, and they die of kidney disease.
Oh, that's tragic.
It was terrible. It was absolutely terrible. And, you know, people love their cats and dogs.
Sure, like family members.
Oh, even sometimes I think even more so. They don't talk back for
yes.
one thing,
right.
or take drugs, or
right.
you know, do or wreck
or,
the family
or ever,
car.
They never ask you to borrow money. That's the big one for me.
Or wrecking the family car
right,
is the
right.
one for me.
Right.
So people love their pets, and nobody cares. I mean, no official body in any place in the country cared in any way. Actually, the lawsuits are still going on, and I believe that I saw very, very recently that the final class action suit was finally settled and people will start getting some of the compensation for it. But this involved a class action suit that's gone on for years.
Now, we have to go into a commercial break in about a minute, but just curious, is wheat gluten also used in human foods as well?
Oh, definitely. It's seitan. It's in health food stores. You find it in health food stores.
And I would imagine that comes from China, too, because it's less expensive. I'm sure they import it from China. And it's probably at the time that this happened, I'm sure that they were doing the same compounding of melanin and wheat flour.
Well, the FDA was testing products right and left, imported. Any product that had protein in it that came from China was being tested by the FDA, and they did find melamine in quite a number of them, and
wow.
they stopped imports for a while. But the melanin issue is, it keeps coming up. Then, of course, right after the book came out, it got into infant formula
Goodness. Well, let's do this. Let's take a quick commercial break. And when we come back, I want to pick up on that area there. We're talking with Marion Nestle about pet food politics, and actually human food politics can't help be affected by this discussion. You're listening to Superhuman Radio. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Muscle building magic happens when you put the right stack together. Iron Mag Labs takes the guesswork out of stacking with Methadrol Extreme. Methadrol Extreme combines three of the most powerful legal anabolics in the world: dimethazine, Superdrol, and Decadrol. The combination of these three agents will ratchet up strength while packing on slabs of muscle and dissolving fat. Don't wait too long, because Methadrol Extreme will only be available for a limited time and is sure to disappear quickly. Go to ironmaglabs.com today and get your bottle of Methadrol Extreme. When you take real performance enhancing supplements, your body is placed under a lot of stress. Your organs need support. If you had to take a supplement for each of the potential side effects: estrogen conversion, blood pressure, liver protection, cholesterol control, water retention, androgen receptor upregulation, kidney function, and much more, you'd have to break the bank just to pay for it all. That's until Need to Build Muscles N2 Guard. N2 Guard does all of this and more. It's the only real cycle support supplement that you'll ever need. Look, if your organs are important to you, buy N2 Guard today at needtobuildmuscle.com. Thousands of Superhuman Radio listeners already know how well GLC 2000 works at repairing joints and cartilage, and it's the best price on the market, milligram for milligram. Now GLC Direct is offering a special that my listeners can take advantage of. Buy one, get one free of any GLC 2000 product. That's right. Buy one of your favorite GLC 2000 products and get one free. Capsules or raw powder. Just mention Superhuman Radio and buy one, get one free today. Call 866-452-3473 or click the GLC banner ad on superhumanradio.com. Offer limited to one per household. Hey, this is Carl. You know, quite often you're forced to choose between price and quality when it comes to purchasing peptides for research purposes. But you don't have to do that any longer, because now there's opresource.net. At OP Resource, you will find the finest authentic peptides available anywhere at the best prices available anywhere. I only trust my research to opresource.net, and you should too. Check them out today. opresource.net. All of your favorite supplements are waiting for you at the best prices and fastest customer service at orbitnutrition.com. Even some of the more popular supplements advertised right here on Superhuman Radio. They carry All-American EFX, LG Sciences, and Primordial Performance products at the best prices on the net. Visit orbitnutrition.com today and check out their complete line. Give them a chance to fill your order. You won't be disappointed. orbitnutrition.com. The best supplements in the universe are at orbitnutrition.com.
That's the sound of 37 dumbbells. That's a lot of weight and a lot of wasted space when you can get the same thing done with just one set of power blocks. The new, quieter, urethane series power blocks with FlexPin technology are the heaviest and easiest to use quick change dumbbells on the market. Starting at just $149 a pair, power blocks can grow as your strength grows, all the way up to 130 pounds per dumbbell. Imagine a whole rack of dumbbells in the space of just one pair with power blocks. Go to powerblock.com today or call 800-651-1937. Power Block, the world's best dumbbells.
Get stronger. Feel younger. It's Superhuman Radio.
Do you want Carl to be able to rant on Casual Fridays again? Quite a few listeners emailed and said they wanted me to stop my rants on Casual Fridays, that Casual Fridays should be uplifting and positive. But now a lot of people are saying, hey, they missed my rants. Go to the homepage of Superhuman Radio today. On the right-hand side, there's a poll, and vote. We'll talk about it on this week's Casual Friday with my lovely and talented co-host, Elisa Profumo. We're talking this hour with Marion Nestle about pet food politics. As we were going into the break, you mentioned something that's a big concern of mine, actually. We talk about soy and adulterated soy products making their way into baby formulas, and you mentioned that this form of wheat gluten, which was actually a combination of wheat flour and melanin, was actually finding its way into baby formula, huh?
No. Melanin was finding its way into baby formula. And the Chinese report that 300,000 infants were affected by melamine that was added to powdered infant formula.
And when we say affected, do we know what they mean by just ill?
Well, they had kidney problems, and some were hospitalized. There were some deaths. Some of the children had permanent kidney damage. It's hard to get very accurate information about the the total damage that was done, but that was what they admitted to. It was really bad.
So it sounds like melanin was used as faux protein. It was a way to fool those who were checking to think that there was a higher content of protein in a particular food than there really was.
Yeah, melamine is very high in nitrogen.
Yeah,
And the test for protein doesn't really test for protein. It tests for nitrogen. So you would think that there would be an easy test for protein, but there's not really.
How do you like that?
So they were able to fool the test. And in our research on this pet food book, we were able to trace back melamine adulteration of food back 40 years.
Wow.
To studies that were done in South Africa in the 1960s and in Italy in the 1970s. In Italy in the 1970s, it was so common for melamine to be used in all kinds of places where you were testing for protein that they had to develop a test to identify it.
Wow.
All of that was published in other languages, and it didn't seem that the FDA or any of the federal agencies that were involved in this knew very much about the history of it.
There you go. So the FDA needs to start hiring more bilingual people so they can read.
I think everybody does.
Yeah, you're right. Now, you know, a lot of my listeners are probably thinking, well, I don't have a pet. This is all interesting stuff, and I feel bad. But this really is far-reaching, further than just the domestic pet ownership. It really reaches into commercial farming and animal husbandry. I talk about on this show, Marion, constantly the importance of animal protein that originates from animals that live a natural life. In other words, grass-fed cows that are not on drugs, chickens that live like chickens that peck and eat worms and stones, unpasteurized raw milk. These are the foods that gave life, if we look at health history, and now we don't have access to them. We have animals that eat artificial diets, and those artificial diets make the animals sick, and then we eat sick animals. These adulterated pet foods were also becoming animal feeds, weren't they?
Oh, in a complicated way, because the pet food manufacturers, if they have leftover pet food, then from the manufacturing process, then they don't want to throw it away. It's highly nutritious, so it gets fed to animals. And sure enough, they were able to find beef producers in California and pig producers, as I remember. There was a pig farm in California that was found to have fed its pigs this adulterated pet food, and the pigs were excreting melamine in their urine. And some of the meat had already been bought by people. So it all got into the food chain in a really complicated way. But fortunately, no people got sick from it.
Yeah, but you know what? We say no people get sick from it, but the reality is that when you, and we've talked about this, I've had scientists on the show discuss this, when you eat sick animals, like for instance, the fat from grass-fed beef is predominantly omega-3 and conjugated linoleic acid.
No, it has some. It's not primarily.
Well, okay, so I'm corrected. It has some. Isn't it hot? But what I was going to say, it's much higher than that of grain-fed, corn-fed.
Oh, well, that's certainly true.
Yes, and the omega-6s are pro-inflammatory, and the omega-3s are anti-inflammatory. In fact, it was told to me by a fellow who raises grass-fed beef that grass-fed beef has the same omega-3 to omega-6 ratio as salmon.
I don't think so.
Really? Okay. All right. Well, that's John Wood from U.S. Wellness Meats is the one who told me that. But anyway, the point being that animals that eat these types of toxins, let's say, or these non-food items, clearly they get sick. If they have kidney problems, then we are eating the meat from an animal that has been sick. That can't be a good thing, in my opinion.
Yeah, and it's certainly not good for the animals.
Well, okay. We're sticking with the animals. Okay.
Yeah, I mean it's these issues are very complicated and not so, I don't find them very easy to talk about in simplistic terms. It's certainly better for the animals, and it has to be better for people in the long run.
Right.
On many, many levels. It's better for the environment. It's better for health. It's better for people who work with the animals. It's better for the communities in which the animals live. All of these things are better.
Right. So now, what happened when you did this, when you wrote the book? Did you get great applause for your looking into this area, or were you met with resistance with this idea that pet food needs to be overseen, so to speak?
Well, the book met with a very complicated reaction. I mean, it was one of those things where you write a book and you think nobody's going to like it. The veterinarians didn't like it because we think that veterinary nutrition education is totally dominated by pet food companies, and that it needs to be more objective, and that veterinary students need to be taught more about the nutrition of dogs and cats than pick this pet food instead of that one. And so the veterinarians didn't like it very much. The regulators that were actually open-minded to what we were talking about, and I actually was invited to give a talk to the Center for Veterinary Medicine at the FDA and talk to their staff about the findings from our book, and I was pleasantly surprised to see that many of the people who were working for the FDA were eagerly working on the same kinds of issues and were trying to do a much better job of regulating. So that actually was a positive note. Most pet owners feed their pets commercial pet foods, and they don't care what their pets eat.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just really not a big issue for them. And for people for whom feeding pets is a big issue, they really feel either that you should cook for your pet, or you should feed your pet raw, you should never feed your pet grains, or other kinds of very pointed and specific pronouncements that we just don't agree with. We think there are lots of different ways of feeding pets that are okay, just as there are lots of ways of feeding humans that are okay, even though we have preferences.
Now, there's a movement, grassroots, albeit at this point in time, movement for the hunter-gatherer diet or the Paleolithic style of eating for humans. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And along with that movement, we have people who own pets that are coming along and saying, you know, if I should eat this ancestral diet, maybe my pet should be eating that way too. So they're getting scraps of meat at the butcher and bones, and they're trying to feed their pets the types of foods that perhaps their pets would have eaten had they not been domesticated. What's your opinion of that?
Well, I think it works as long as you watch out for some of the special mineral needs of pets. As I said, there are lots of different ways of feeding pets that are good, and pet owners have to figure out what works for them. And if, I mean, I guess the best example of that is there are vegetarians who insist that their pets eat vegetarian diets, and then there's the ancestral people who feel that you should never feed vegetables or grains to pets at all, and yet there are pets raised on both of these diets that do okay if the nutritional needs are taken care of. That's what makes it complicated. And for these commercial complete and balanced pet foods, they all have to meet the same nutritional standards. And so in that sense, they're like baby foods or infant formula, where all infant formulas are the same. There's really no difference between them because they all have to, except some are organic and some are not. That's the main difference.
Right.
And similar things occur in pet foods because the nutritional standards are all the same, but the ingredients may differ. And how important those differences are, I think, is a matter of values. And how important you think they are. It's very, very difficult to demonstrate scientifically.
And are you familiar with the works of Dr. Francis Pottinger?
Yes, of course.
Did you think that he his works were valid, or do you think that he was just stretching?
Well, I think what's difficult about this is there's no research. And in a situation in which there's no research, then belief systems enter into play. Do I think pets would be harmed by following Pottinger's principles? Not at all. I think they're perfectly fine.
I mean,
But on the other hand, there's no research that shows that one kind of pet food diet is better than another. And so in that situation, owners have to make their own decisions.
We're doing a show later in the week that was research that was done by Dr. John Ioannidis, who is the director of medicine over at Harvard, I believe now. And he's done a series, and the only reason I inject this is because of my next statement. He actually says that research is flawed. All research is flawed. The desire to find the end result skews the process, and he gives very, very good quantitative and qualitative information to support his opinion, and he's a very well-respected scientist in his own right. And we're actually talking about this later in the week, which leads me to the statement of, you know, this radio show found its legs on having scientists on this show discussing their research in an effort to allow listeners to come away with the message that was expected by the scientist. And I am actually having a change of heart now and wondering if we put way too much weight on research and not enough in this particular case, you know, looking at the past, you know, looking at how our ancestors ate, looking at how animals ate 100 years ago. You know, we think we do everything better today because we have science, we have research. We say, hey, well, this is better now. I'm starting to question that. I want to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, I want to pick up with this thought. We're talking with Marion Nessel about pet food politics. Later in the show, we will have Stephanie Senefon talking about more information about the cholesterol myth. This is going to be a really good show. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. The fourth most abundant mineral in the body, magnesium, is responsible for 300 biochemical reactions, normal muscle and nerve function, proper heart rhythm, healthy immune system, and proper hormone levels. But most find taking oral magnesium problematic. Get optimum magnesium levels with transdermal magnesium oil from MikeMahler.com. Magnesium absorbed through the skin can elevate DHEA levels and a variety of other reactions that can increase energy, reduce muscle soreness, lose stomach fat, and ramp up heart health. Go to MikeMahler.com today. That's Mike, MAHLER.com. Never before has an anti-estrogen been so powerful. The triazole formula is built on a potent, all-natural aromatase inhibitor called Pizole, which has been shown in clinical trial to be as effective as a leading prescription aromatase inhibitor. Pizole works in concert with the rest of the triazole formula to control estrogen while simultaneously boosting testosterone significantly. In fact, one of triazole's testers had a 120% increase in total testosterone and a 257% increase in free testosterone. Triazole is available at bodybuilding.com, NutriPlanet.com, or where finest supplements are sold. For more information, check out GetDS.com. Sissies may want to stop listening now. Super DMZ is the most powerful legal compound available on the market today, bar none. Super DMZ will give you lean muscle and strength gains at comparable rates to the anabolic steroid Dianabol with none of the water retention or bloat. Super DMZ contains Superdrol dimethazine, not to be confused with other Superdrol knockoffs. Get Super DMZ while supplies last at IronMagLabs.com. Don't wait too long because Super DMZ is sure to be added to the government ban list. Go to IronMagLabs.com today. Finally, a bovine supplement right from the source used in the original study. Phytoserms 347 is here. Bovine natalensis has been shown to dramatically increase testosterone levels in clinical research, but sourcing the real ingredient has proven near impossible. Now, Ruthless Supplements has done the impossible. Each capsule of Phytoserms 347 has the exact amount of pure Prolensis TM bovine natalensis required to produce a dramatic increase in total and free testosterone. You can't get this anywhere else but at Ruthless Supplements. Visit RLSSupplements.com today. Testosterone is the king of anabolic hormones, and Test Charge is unlike any testosterone amplifier you have ever tried, because only Test Charge has taxadrol, a substance that grows in only one place in the world and is only found in Test Charge. Test Charge will jack your testosterone levels like illegal agents, but rest assured, there are no banned substances in Test Charge. Test Charge is the secret weapon used by IFBB FBB legend Flex Wheeler. And now you can join the pro ranks. Go to AAEFX.com to learn more about where you can find Test Charge today. CoQ10 is known to ramp up mitochondrial function. PQQ is documented to increase mitochondrial biogenesis and size. Now get two of the most advanced anti-aging supplements in a single capsule. Brought to you by Dr. Peter Rouse, CoQ10 and PQQ combined will give your body the mitochondrial energy and production that you need. And to make this offer even better, Superhuman Radio listeners get 20% off when you call 310-895-5385 and mention that you heard it on Superhuman Radio.
Build muscle, burn fat. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. My guest this hour, Marion Nestle. We're talking about pet food politics. As we're going into the break, I was doing my little dissertation about the reliability of research. What's your opinion of research now, Marion?
Well, I'm trained in science, so I have a scientific bias. I think that there's good research and there's bad research, and one of the differences is that good research attempts to control for biases. I was trained in molecular biology, and one of the things you learn in molecular biology school is how to criticize other people's work for sources of bias that they're not even aware of.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just trained to sort of look for that. So when I'm looking at research, I want to look at whether the research has biases that I can recognize, and I hope there aren't going to be too many that I don't recognize. The research in pet food that I wanted to see were very, very well-controlled studies comparing the effects of one diet or another. I would have liked to see comparisons of raw diets, home-cooked diets, and commercial pet food diets to see whether the pets were healthier or lived longer on one or another. And that research simply doesn't exist.
Yeah.
And that's because nobody would pay for it.
Right.
Who
right.
would pay for it?
Right, because the Purina is not going to pay for it. It'll put them out of business if raw food works out to be better, unless they're
exactly.
going to go into the raw food business.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
And nobody's going to pay for it. These are very, very difficult studies to do. So instead, these pet food companies do research on whether some pet food tastes better to another. To an animal than another pet food. They're not really interested in health promotion effects as long as they meet the basic guidelines for meeting the nutritional standards that will promote health and reproduction for the period of time that's required. That's really all they have to do. And there is no independent research. One of the things that we suggest in the book, it's sort of a pie-in-the-sky idea, was that pet food companies contribute to a common research pool where independent research can be done. But at the present time, it's extremely difficult, and pet owners are left with trying to figure out for themselves whether what they're doing for their pets is working or not working, and that's why you have such strong opinions. And if you look at the books that are out on the market, I mean, I just actually found them hilarious because you can pick up any set of books about pet feeding, and they will absolutely insist that you should feed bones, you should never feed bones. You should feed raw, you should never feed raw. You should feed this or you should never feed that. You could just pick a book
right.
that meets your idea, your belief system about what you should do.
Right.
With the most obvious example being the vegetarian versus the no grain.
Right.
I mean, what's somebody supposed to do? Well, you try it yourself. And we have friends and colleagues who insist that only cooking for your pet is the only thing to do. You would not cook for your
children.
See,
part of the problem with pets is this. There's a social consciousness about pets today. We have PETA. We have all these, you know, people who want to protect animals, and it's wonderful. I forget who it was. Was it Winston Churchill, somebody who said you could always judge the quality of a country by the way they treat their animals
right.
or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we actually kind of superimpose human feelings on pets and human thoughts on pets and human desires on our pets. And we think our pets want the same things we want. They want to do the same things we do. And they feel the same things we feel. Now, I'm not saying that they don't, but we don't know that they do. And what ends up happening, I think, that polarizes into groups is, well, I'm a vegetarian, and I believe animals probably should be vegetarians too. This is that superimposition of what human feels and human does, we want pets to do too, which kind of really cloudies the water. We can't really make a decision when we're saying, because we aren't animals and they aren't humans. So,
yeah, I mean, what you can tell with the existing evidence is that pets seem to thrive on all different kinds of diets as long as their nutritional needs are met, and there aren't things in there that are poisoning them. But that's not very helpful.
Right.
And it also doesn't sell pet products. I mean, one of the things about cooking for pets that, you know, I thought really required some thinking was that one of the things that pet foods do is they use up the parts of animals that we don't eat.
Right.
So in a sense, they're a place for getting rid of the byproducts of human food production.
Right.
That horrifies some people. But I think of it as being incredibly ecological because those parts of the animals are equally nutritious. And we calculated that if we didn't feed commercial pet food to dogs and cats in the United States, it would be the equivalent of feeding another 32 million people.
Yeah, but see, that I have a problem with this. The industry thrives on finding ways to use its waste and turn it into profits. We saw this in the late 1800s. With distilleries getting into the dairy business because they had all this mash left over that they were throwing. They think, gee, what are we going to do with this corn and this grain?
Mm-hmm.
Hey, we'll feed it to cows. We already bottle liquor. Let's bottle milk. And hence, the need for pasteurization arose due to the swill milk epidemic.
Mm-hmm.
So the industry is famous for trying to take its poop and sell it to somebody.
Yes.
And I kind of feel like sometimes.
So what would you do in this case?
Marion, sometimes you just got to throw poop away. You can't sell it to somebody. Sometimes it's garbage and that's it. And I do agree with you. I was an avid hunter at one point in my life, and I followed koi dogs in upstate New York for a period of time when I was hunting bear. And I studied some of the habits of koi dogs. And when koi dogs would catch a deer, they would do two things. They would eat the rear most muscular portion of the upper legs, first of all. And then they would dig into the gut, and they would eat certain organs. I don't know what organs they were eating because I wasn't going to eviscerate these animals and count and see what was missing. But it was clear to me, given their choice, given the opportunity to choose what they really want to eat, they ate the most muscular portion of the deer and then certain organ meats. And I say, you know what?
They probably ate the guts too.
Well, maybe they did the entrails. I don't know, but because
that's where all the vitamins are.
There you go. And dogs love stinky stuff, so it's perfect. But
right.
I mean, as a hunter, I thrived on eating certain organ meats, and I thrived on eating the back legs of the deer, which was the most meaty and more muscular and leanest and so on and so forth. So now it becomes a competition between me and the koi dogs. We're fighting for the same food, which leads me to say what I said a moment ago. Sometimes poop is poop. You got to throw it away. Just because we can feed it to animals doesn't, and they can live on it. And, you know, live is a really subjective word. Thrive and live are very, very different. Just because they can survive and live on our waste products doesn't mean that we should feed it to them.
Okay.
That's just my opinion. And I'm not,
okay.
I don't have a pet, by the way, because I'm too selfish with my time. we just did a show on Friday, Marion.
Uh-huh.
And it was, there's a new trend now. Those who create concepts for healthy pets are now saying that you should brush your dog's teeth and floss your dog's teeth.
Yes, I know.
And I have to admit, I've admitted this to my audience, and I'll admit it to you as well. When I did have a dog up until about four or five years ago,
this was not something you did.
I wouldn't even pick up his poop. He was a very small dog, and I felt like, look, squirrels are pooping out here. Nobody's picking up their poop. His poop is maybe about five times larger than a squirrel's poop. It's going to go into the earth. It's harmless. I am not walking around with a baggie full of poop until I get him home.
It's a good thing you don't live in New York. where you'd have to.
Oh, I know. Well, it's different. I live in Kentucky where there's lots of grass. But I'm born in Brooklyn, and I know what you're talking about. You put sidewalks and poop, they just don't go to.
They do not go well together at all.
I know. But just think about how confusing it must be for the pets who see us pick up their excrement and put it in, and they must be thinking, "Oh my God, you know, what is he going to do with that?"
You know, they trained you very well.
Yeah, I know. It's terrible. But anyway, now tell me about imported foods. What is your opinion of imported foods as a result of your research? Do you feel that imported food in general is a dangerous thing because we don't have oversight? We're taking people's words for it, and we're limited on how we can test it?
Well, I have mixed feelings about it, obviously. Imported foods have always been part of the human food supply. The minute humans invented boats, they were shipping food all over the world. And I kind of like bringing in foods from other places. The problem that you're referring to, of course, is the fact that there's very little safety oversight of imported foods.
Right.
Mainly because the FDA doesn't have the resources or manpower to do the kinds of inspections that would be necessary. It's not necessary to inspect everything that comes into the country, but it is necessary to do enough inspections to act as a deterrent to somebody who's trying to get away with something.
Right.
And they can't even do that at this point. And given what's going on in Congress right now, it seems unlikely that that situation is going to change very soon. You know, one of the problems that the FDA has is that it gets its appropriations from agriculture appropriations committees, not health committees. Even though the FDA is a public health agency and part of the public health service, it gets its funding from agricultural appropriations committees because of a long historical business that's never been solved. And agriculture committees couldn't care less about the FDA.
Right. Right.
And you should hear the pronouncements of the people who were there saying they think our food supply is safe enough and that doesn't need any more money. I mean, that's the attitude in Congress today. I find that astounding. It used to be that imported foods could be sort of managed and inspected. Now there's just too much of them and too many of them. And because we're so focused on having a food supply that's cheap, we import our foods from overseas, even though these are things that we grow perfectly well here. Apples are a perfectly good example. Why are we importing apples from China when we grow them all over this country? We're importing them from China because they're cheaper.
Right. Right. It's sad. It's very sad. It really is.
And that's the price we pay for them. That's why I'm so in favor of local grown, growing your own food, any place getting it locally. What that does is it keeps the money here. It supports communities. It makes sure we have some rural land left. It does a lot of good things.
You would love my show. We talk about this constantly. That's one of the drums I bang, supporting the local farmer. Buying your beef, your eggs, buying your produce from local sources, it's so important. And, you know, the decentralization of the food supply is safer, that you don't have to worry about 8 states being affected by some bacteria that's found in, you know, wilted lettuce because the plant that bagged it did something wrong. When you're getting it from your farmer, maybe 5 or 6 families can get sick, and that's about it. We're going to take our last commercial break, and when we come back, we're going to wrap up the interview with Marion Nestle. We'll also tell you how you can get her books. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. If you want to be superhuman, you can't eat junk. Finally, there's a protein bar that isn't just candy in disguise. Quest protein bars have 20 grams of protein, 4 to 5 grams of non-fiber carbs, and the only bars on the market with no sugar or sugar alcohols. I've never promoted a protein bar before, but these are delicious and unlike any other protein bars you've ever tried before. They're so good that Quest Nutrition is giving away 2 free bars to all my listeners, even free shipping. Go to superhumanradio.com right now and click the Quest protein bar banner ad to try them today. Pre-workout products crank you up
abrupt and leave you flat and fatigued. Except now, you're strung out from being overstimulated, hungry because it destroyed your appetite, and in a catabolic state because you can't eat for recovery and growth. That's why you need to get Lit Up from Applied Nutraceuticals. Lit Up is an original blend, not a copycat formula here. Lit Up delivers the perfect amount of energy, focus, pump, and intensity without feeling strung out or a loss of appetite for hours after your workout. Plus, Lit Up creates an anabolic environment by jacking testosterone levels through the roof. Get Lit Up today at appnut.com.
I've never felt a pump from taking a supplement. That's until I tried creatine nitrate from APS Nutrition. I expected to feel nothing, just like the NO supplements I had taken before. But this stuff really does work. Even taking below the recommended dose, I could feel the sensation of tighter muscles under the swelling effect of the pump. And the pump lasts for a few hours. It worked for me, and I was a skeptic. Check out creatine nitrate by visiting APSNutrition.com today. Try it, and you'll be a believer too.
Muscle building magic happens when you put the right stack together. Iron Mag Labs takes the guesswork out of stacking with Methadrol Extreme. Methadrol Extreme combines three of the most powerful legal anabolics in the world: dimethazine, superdrol, and decadrol. The combination of these three agents will ratchet up strength while packing on slabs of muscle and dissolving fat. Don't wait too long, because Methadrol Extreme will only be available for a limited time and is sure to disappear quickly. Go to IronMagLabs.com today and get your bottle of Methadrol Extreme. From the most advanced supplement company on the planet, Primordial Performance, comes the new Andro series. Andro Lean is a thermogenic aid that will promote lipolysis and incinerate body fat. Andro Mass creates explosive gains and is highly anabolic. Andro Hard will turn your muscles into granite hard stone while increasing sex drive and maximizing strength. The Andro series represents the most advanced delivery systems available anywhere. These are non-methylated and completely liver safe and non-toxic. Buy one or stack all of the new Andro series products today at PrimordialPerformance.com.
Protein is the building block of muscle. Protein-rich diets have been shown to not only be heart healthy, but also burn body fat through the thermogenic effect of protein in the digestive process. But getting enough protein each day isn't easy. That's why I use True Protein from TrueProtein.com. TrueProtein.com has an incredible variety of flavors. My favorite is chocolate coconut. And you can even create your own custom blend. Mix whey, casein, and egg, or throw in a little beef isolate. And you can save 5% off the already low, low price when you use the coupon code SHRADIO. Visit TrueProtein.com today and let them know Carl sent you.
Your radio just got ripped. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. My guest this hour, Marion Nestle. Marion, you've written how many books now?
No, at least five.
Okay. And the ones we're talking about today, pet food politics and food politics, focus on some of the challenges on obtaining healthy food, correct?
That's right.
Okay.
Where
can people get these books? Where you
Any bookstore. So, well, most bookstores have a copy or two, but you certainly can get them online.
Okay.
Amazon or Barnes & Noble or whatever.
Okay. Now.
And then I have a website where there's information about the books, and that's www.foodpolitics.com.
Okay. Is that where your blog is also?
Yes.
Now, tell me about your Twitter. You have, one of the most popular Twitters, according to Time Magazine or something?
Time Magazine named my Twitter as one of the top, most influential 140 Twitters. I was kind of amazed.
Oh, my God. So you and Puff Daddy are, in the same category when it comes to Twitter. How do you like that?
Yeah, I think it was Andy Borowitz who was number one. I don't know how you interpret this.
Oh, okay.
And then it was also named as one of the top 10 in health and sciences. And that was very flattering, because the others in the top 10 were the British Science Magazine, The Lancet, and the New York Academy of Sciences, and the Institute of Medicine, and places like that.
So what kind of information do you tweet?
I talk about food politics.
Okay.
Nothing but food politics. On the other hand, that encompasses a great deal of information. And I usually, my blog goes out automatically on Twitter.
Okay.
And so whatever I'm blogging about goes at the first 140 characters go out. And then usually once or twice a day something comes in on my email that I think would be interesting to people.
What is your Twitter name or Twitter
it's
address?
It's at Marion Nestle.
Marion Nestle. MarionNestle.
Right.
Okay. All right, couple questions for you, kind of just to get a feel for what you think about this. Gary Taubes.
An excellent science writer whose piece on sugar in the New York Times Magazine this Sunday was really excellent.
Yeah, we're actually talking about that later this week.
Very carefully balanced and nuanced, which he's not exactly famous for nuance, but this one was.
Yeah, he's been on the show a few times. He's a great
guy.
Good. I like him a lot.
Mm-hmm. Okay. He's a really good writer.
What's your opinion of genetically modified foods like sugar beets and corn mm-hmm. and all that sort of stuff?
Yeah, my book, Safe Food, The Politics of Food Safety, which came out in the new edition in 2010. Half of that book is devoted to a discussion of genetically modified foods. What I worry most about them is corporate control of the food supply, because such a large proportion of corn, soybeans, and sugar beets are genetically modified. It doesn't leave much room for innovation.
So as a molecular biologist, you don't see any challenges with ingesting this? A lot of people like to call it Frankenfood to sensationalize it.
I don't have any principled objections. What worries me most about them is that they came into the food supply because they were supposed to solve world food problems, but they don't address world food problems at all. They address first world problems and are really designed to make money for the people who own the patents to them.
Right.
And the whole patenting issue is very disturbing. So it's more the political aspects of them that bother me, and they bother me a lot, than the health aspects. I'm not aware of any situations in which they have as yet made anyone sick.
Okay. What is your, or can you clarify something for me now that you said that? Because you are all about food politics, and since we're talking about the GMO technology, it was told to me once by a gentleman named Howard Vlieger, who was on my show, that the American taxpayers paid for genetically modified food research, and then the technology was turned over to companies like Monsanto, and now they own it. Is there any truth to that?
I'm not sure how it went. I believe that Monsanto scientists were the ones who were involved in the initial development, but I'm not actually sure about that. I do think that that the idea that they can patent a life form is something that really requires reconsideration. And the idea that 90% of American corn, soybeans, and sugar beets are genetically modified is really scary to me, because if something goes wrong, it goes wrong big time. And it's also quite clear that weeds and other plants are developing resistance to Roundup,
right?
Which really puts this in a very, very difficult situation. I don't think this is good for agriculture.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. What's your opinion of soy as a food product?
It's a food like any other. There are people who think it's a poison. There are people who think it's a panacea. I devote a whole chapter of my book, What to Eat, with trying to sort out the science on either side. And my bottom line on it is the differences in the research are so small that it's just a food. I wouldn't eat a whole lot of it, but I think some of it is fine.
Do you believe that soy isoflavones that mimic certain hormones like estrogens, the phytoestrogens, do you believe that they really are effective for women who are peri and postmenopausal?
I don't see much evidence in support of that. I mean, there's some evidence, but it's not overwhelming. And in general, when you're eating, you know, soybeans were, except in the form of edamame or fermented forms that are used
right,
in Asia,
right,
were really much more of a food for animals than people. The way my rules about food are standard nutritionist's advice about variety, balance, and moderation. You know, it really works.
Yeah, I'm one of those people who hate soy.
Mm-hmm. I don't like it. It has that bitter taste.
Well, no, I mean,
I don't think
we should be eating soy. I don't think it's a, I know that it's high protein, but like you said before, melamine can fool us into thinking we have high protein too. I don't think soy is a good food. And there's some research recently that has the oncology community just jumping up and down. The three major isoflavones in soy seem to be able to switch off the DNA repair system, so that when radiotherapy is used to obliterate cancer by pre-treating the cells with the three major isoflavones, actually causes a greater degree of damage because the DNA cannot repair itself. And while everybody's jumping up and down, I'm thinking to myself, wait a minute. That means that people who eat soy are also switching off the DNA reparation system, even though they're not trying to obliterate a cluster of cancer cells.
Yeah, so, here's where I agree with the person who you quoted before. Whenever you do research on single factors isolated from food, you're taking them out of context, and you always have to interpret that research very carefully.
Yeah.
I'd be hesitant about jumping into that.
Yeah. Okay, well, you know what the good news is? I don't have any accreditation. So,
but you have opinions, and
yeah,
that's good.
And you know what? And my dad used to have a saying about opinions that I can't say on the air right now. But you're right. I do have opinions, and quite often most of them are wrong. So my listeners know that anyway.
Well, otherwise you'd be boring to listen to.
There you go. Tell me, the last thing I want to ask you, is pet food better today? Do you think that as a result of you shining a light on these issues and the social consciousness about healthy lifestyles for animals, do you believe that the pet food manufacturers are getting some of the message, and are pet foods safer and healthier today for pets?
I think they're getting the message very clearly that people want healthier ingredients in pet foods, and a lot of them are moving to do that. But this is still a business, and it still suffers from all of the let's cut corners kind of approaches. But the part that bothers me the most is the idea is it's just pets. We don't have to take this seriously because we're just talking about pets.
Right.
And I think if there was one message that I got from all of that research, it was that pet food needs to be taken seriously, because if we can't do pet food right, we're not going to be doing human food right.
I loved your byline on the cover of the book, the Chihuahua in the mine.
Pet food politics, the Chihuahua in the coal mine.
Yeah, instead of the canary.
This was the canary, and if we don't do pet food, if we don't produce pet food safely and healthfully, we're not going to be producing human food safely and healthfully.
I'm with you on this one. I really am. Listen, I want to thank you very much for coming on the show today and talking about this. This is an important subject. A lot of my listeners have been asking me to do more shows for their pets, believe it or not. And so that goes to, full circle to what we were saying before, that people, impose the same feelings on their pets that they do on themselves, and they want to be healthier and stronger and live longer, and they want their pets to be healthier, stronger, and live longer. And I believe that some people out there probably are brushing and flossing their pets' teeth as a result of the show we did the other day.
No question.
I am not. Last question. Do you have pets?
No, not at all. I travel much too much. I've had pets, many, over the years, especially when my children were young. But right now I'm traveling all the time, and I really can't do it.
And that's why I don't want a pet now, because I'm planning on traveling a lot. So there you go. That's it. Listen, Marion, thanks so much for doing the show.
My pleasure.
Okay, stay tuned. When we come back, we're going to have Stephanie Senefon. She is a scientist who has done more research on statin drugs and cholesterol than anyone out there. And she's got some shocking information for those of you who still believe that your cholesterol levels are indicative of heart disease. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing. My near vision has improved, and I can read small print from 8 inches. My overall vision is clearer, and the glare from oncoming headlights doesn't bother me any longer. Just 1 to 2 drops a day, and the results are visible. You can find CanSee eye drops at wisechoicemedicine.net or call 800-861-4936. That's 800-861-4936. wisechoicemedicine.net. CanSee eye drops. The name says it all.
I've never felt a pump from taking a supplement. That's until I tried creatine nitrate from APS Nutrition. I expected to feel nothing, just like the NO supplements I had taken before. But this stuff really does work. Even taking below the recommended dose, I could feel the sensation of tighter muscles under the swelling effect of the pump. And the pump lasts for a few hours. It worked for me, and I was a skeptic. Check out creatine nitrate by visiting APSNutrition.com today. Try it, and you'll be a believer too.
Thousands of Superhuman Radio listeners already know how well GLC 2000 works at repairing joints and cartilage, and it's the best price on the market, milligram for milligram. Now GLC Direct is offering a special that my listeners can take advantage of. Buy one, get one free of any GLC 2000 product. That's right. Buy one of your favorite GLC 2000 products and get one free. Capsules or raw powder. Just mention Superhuman Radio and buy one, get one free today. Call 866-452-3473 or click the GLC banner ad on superhumanradio.com. Offer limited to one per household.
CoQ10 is known to ramp up mitochondrial function. PQQ is documented to increase mitochondrial biogenesis and size. Now get two of the most advanced anti-aging supplements in a single capsule. Brought to you by Dr. Peter Rouse, CoQ10 and PQQ combined will give your body the mitochondrial energy and production that you need. And to make this offer even better, Superhuman Radio listeners get 20% off when you call 310-895-5385 and mention that you heard it on Superhuman Radio.
Hey, this is Carl. You know, quite often you're forced to choose between price and quality when it comes to purchasing peptides for research purposes. But you don't have to do that any longer because now there's opresource.net. At OP Resource, you will find the finest authentic peptides available anywhere at the best prices available anywhere. I only trust my research to opresource.net, and you should too. Check them out today. opresource.net.
Protein is the building block of muscle. Protein-rich diets have been shown to not only be heart healthy, but also burn body fat through the thermogenic effect of protein in the digestive process. But getting enough protein each day isn't easy. That's why I use True Protein from TrueProtein.com. TrueProtein.com has an incredible variety of flavors. My favorite is chocolate coconut. And you can even create your own custom blend. Mix whey, casein, and egg, or throw in a little beef isolate. And you can save 5% off the already low price when you use the coupon code SHRADIO. Visit TrueProtein.com today and let them know Carl sent you.
This is the Superhuman Channel, where brawn and brains finally meet.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. Just want to remind you that opresource.net offers my audience an additional 25% off their already low prices on peptides. We did a show yesterday with Professor Philip Filinov talking about pegylated mechanogrowth factor, IGF-1 long R3, and growth hormone releasing peptide 6, GHRP6. $26, $24, additional 25% off when you use the coupon code SUPERHUMAN25, SUPERHUMAN25. Go to opresource.net and check them out. Okay, everybody knows I hate the whole cholesterol myth. We've done so many shows on it. We know why cholesterol is being implicated, and we know how profitable statin drugs are for the pharmaceutical industry. Well, my next guest is a scientist who's put a lot of effort into researching this, and it's made it really her current life work, and Stephanie Seneff. How you doing, Stephanie?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Very good, very good. Okay, first of all, you are a computer science major, correct?
That's right.
Okay.
Well, actually, it's not quite right. I studied biology as an undergraduate at MIT. That was my major, and I minored in food and nutrition. So
okay.
I certainly have background in that space. And then I got my PhD in computer science.
Okay. And then my next question was going to be, why did you set your target on cholesterol and statin drugs?
Way back in the 1970s and 1980s, when the low-fat diet craze hit, I was sure that it was wrong, and I was assuming it would be a fad. And it's amazed me that to this day it's still so entrenched in our society.
Why do you think that is?
That fats are bad.
Why do you think that is?
Well, I think that it conceivably can be traced back to the statin industry in part, because I think the timing is interesting. And as they became aware that their drug could be a really big moneymaker, they really wanted to get the message out that cholesterol and fats are bad, especially, of course, cholesterol, but fats, you know.
Right.
Saturated fats come with cholesterol.
Right, right.
So if they could sort of teach you that these things are bad, then you would be willing to buy their drug and they would get rich. And I think it could be that simple. Now, of course, there was also the whole Ansel Keys story, and I'm not sure, you know, that, and then, I'm getting a little off target here, but the thing that turned me around and made me become really determined to take this project on was the book by Gary Taubes, Good Calories, Bad Calories. I got a hold of that book when it first came out, and I couldn't put it down because it really answered to everything that I was feeling about what's really wrong with the American diet.
Yes.
And how we're so off base in the way we're treating it.
You know
diametrically opposite. Yeah.
You know what amazes me the most? We are so focused on research in this day and age that we've abandoned any information that we've accumulated over the past 300-400 years. And what I mean by that is we people out there who continue to promote this low-fat, high-carbohydrate-centric diet of today fail to realize that our ancestors, and if you look at ancestral diets, these diets were very high in saturated fats, high in fats in general, animal fats especially, animal protein especially. So why all of a sudden are these have become the benchmark for disease is beyond me. I don't understand.
I know. I totally agree with you. And in fact, the other thing that I picked up on was Weston Price, and I found out about the Weston Price Foundation. And I think that's an awesome organization. Sally Fallon, I know she's talked on your show, right?
Right.
Has she?
Right.
Yeah. And, I think she's got the right message. I mean, as far as the diet she advocates, I think it's right. And, Weston Price, I read his book, Nutrition and Physical Degeneration. It was really fascinating. And he never used the word cholesterol because I don't think that word even exists, existed, but certainly not in his vocabulary. But he kept on mentioning foods that were incredibly high in cholesterol as being the foods that these people, the people who were living the traditional lifestyle were eating these foods. They were going out of their way to find these foods. You know, the organ meats and the lobster and shellfish and all kinds of sea eggs, you know, I mean, turtle eggs and fish eggs and, you know, these things are all loaded with cholesterol. And then he showed that these people were incredibly healthy compared to the people who were eating the white flour, white sugar that was being distributed by the Western world. You know, at that time it was just starting to get into these cultures.
Right.
And messing them up.
Right. Okay, so let's do this. I'm going to play a little bit of devil's advocate today, okay? I am on the same side of the page as you, but I'm going to try to be on the opposite side of the page so that we can kind of go through this step by step. I would almost like to have your interview become a template for my listeners when they are sitting in company and start talking about cholesterol, that they can actually be well versed in what to say, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So,
okay, good.
What do you say to the people who say to you, well, but Stephanie, the cholesterol causes heart disease and arteriosclerosis.
Right. Well, I have a good answer for that. It's not cholesterol that causes it. It's high levels of small, dense LDL particles. And I don't know if your audience knows about LDL, HDL, and all of that kind
of
thing.
Yes, they do. But go ahead.
Okay, good. Because HDL is a good guy, LDL is a bad guy, right?
Right.
And LDL is high, and that's correlated with arteriosclerosis. No doubt about it.
Okay.
I mean, it's not, no doubt about it. It's obviously not a, it's actually not a very strong correlation, but there is a correlation.
Okay.
And, but the reason, but what that really means is the small, dense LDL particles are high. And those things are basically a consequence of the high sugar diet. I mean, that's the most extraordinary thing. And I can explain, let me see if I can explain why. The sugars are actually very damaging in the blood, and they cause, there's this thing called AGE, A-G-E,
right.
Very aptly named, advanced glycation end product.
Right.
And proteins get all gummed up with sugar, basically, is what that's about. And then they can't work properly. And this is what happens to LDL when there's too much sugar in the blood.
Right.
The way you get too much sugar is by eating a high-carb, low-fat diet.
Right.
Because the carbs go right in, and the sugar spikes up, the insulin goes, you know, after it to try to get rid of it.
You know what always amazes me when doctors talk about triglycerides, that no one goes, hey, doc, what's the glycerol? Since this is cholesterol you're talking about, why are we talking about glycerides? Isn't glycerides associated with glucose? Isn't that like a sugar?
It is. It is.
No one ever picks up on the word triglycerides. It bangs me on the head sometimes. I think to myself,
that's true.
You're talking to me about a sugar, not a fat, triglycerides.
Well, let me tell you about another sugar that I just picked up on. It's called methylglyoxal. Methylglyoxal.
Okay.
And that is a very interesting substance. It's one of the worst aging agents, so it basically clobbers things. And it's produced, it's actually found in high amounts in Coca-Cola.
Really?
And it comes in with the fructose. And so I know you probably know about Robert Lustig and the Sugar of the Bitter Truth, the video that went viral. So this is a one-hour lecture given by a doctor, Robert Lustig. He's a pediatrician. At UC San Francisco.
Okay.
And this was, I think a lot of people watched this video called Sugar the Bitter Truth, and his whole message was that fructose is the bad thing.
Right.
And fructose, the liver basically desperately tries to take the fructose out of the blood as fast as it can, and it converts it into fat, which is actually very
interesting. Actually, it converts it into triglycerides.
Right. Well, yeah, but converts it into fats. Packages that are inside LDL makes your LDL go up, therefore, right?
Right.
Worse than that, it's bad LDL because the liver doesn't have enough cholesterol to wrap it up. And you need the cholesterol in the outside layer of the LDL to protect it from damage in the bloodstream. The bloodstream is a very dangerous place to be. You've got the oxygen, you've got the sugar. It's dangerous. The cholesterol protects it, protects the contents inside the LDL from damage. And this is bad LDL because there isn't enough cholesterol. The liver can't even make cholesterol when it's busy processing fructose. So it's caught between a rock and a hard place.
Wow.
So it sends out all this bad LDL. The LDL gets clobbered by the sugar. It's still there because there's so much of it. And then the LDL ends up, eventually, this also impedes its ability to deliver its goods. Its goods are all good things. Cholesterol, vitamin D, antioxidants, all these things are carried inside the LDL to protect it from the damage from the blood. And then it can't deliver its product because it's all gummed up with sugar. So it hangs around longer, gets more damage. And by the time it ends up being small, dense LDL, which is what's supposed to then go back to the liver and get disposed of and cleaned up and refurbished, you know.
Right.
But it can't go back into the liver because it's so gummed up. And then the macrophages have to take over that job. It's a nasty job.
Right,
taking it out of the blood.
Macrophages are basically the body's garbage men. They've got to get the waste products out.
That's right. They're cleaning out the stuff that's all, you know, damaged and useless because of the sugar.
Right, right. Interesting. And you know what? And people who use fruit as a pre-workout carbohydrate source, I tell them all the time, that's a waste of time because fructose cannot be utilized immediately in the body as energy. It must be converted to a triglyceride first and put at the at the back of the line for an energy source. So why would you even eat fruit in the first place?
I know. But I have to say that the fructose in fruit is not as bad as the fructose in high fructose corn syrup, and here's why. Because the fructose in high fructose corn syrup is generated by a synthetic process that takes place in the plant. It's an engineering, you know, the general foods, basically, they convert starch into sugar from corn.
Right.
Through a process that's non-enzymatic. And that process ends up with these extra particles that are this methyl glyoxal that's really dangerous.
Is that,
whereas
you know,
the fructose,
they used to say that high fructose corn syrup, the problem with it, that there was a portion of the fructose that was unbound. Is that the methyl that you're talking, what is it called again?
That's interesting. That may be methyl glyoxal. I mean, I think that may be the same message. They basically don't, whenever you let a biological system do something, it knows how to do it right. When you do it in the lab, you're going to do it wrong.
Right.
And they don't, it's tricky. It's tricky dealing with fructose. And with starch in general and glucose, it's just a tricky process. And biology has worked it out, but when you start doing it through chemical processing, you know, all bets are off.
Okay, let's do this. Let's take a quick commercial break. When we come back, I'm going to ask you the next logical question that people always ask, but don't statin drugs prevent heart attack and heart disease?
Fine.
We're talking with Stephanie Seneff today about the cholesterol myth and the rise and hopefully soon to fall statin drug industry. You're listening to Superhuman Radio. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing. My near vision has improved, and I can read small print from 8 inches. My overall vision is clearer, and the glare from oncoming headlights doesn't bother me any longer. Just 1 to 2 drops a day, and the results are visible. You can find CanSee eye drops at wisechoicemedicine.net or call 800-861-4936. That's 800-861-4936. wisechoicemedicine.net. CanSee eye drops. The name says it all.
Never before has an anti-estrogen been so powerful. The triazole formula is built on a potent, all-natural aromatase inhibitor called Pizole, which has been shown in clinical trial to be as effective as a leading prescription aromatase inhibitor. Pizole works in concert with the rest of the triazole formula to control estrogen while simultaneously boosting testosterone significantly. In fact, one of triazole's testers had a 120% increase in total testosterone and a 257% increase in free testosterone. Triazole is available at bodybuilding.com, NutriPlanet.com, or where finest supplements are sold. For more information, check out GetDS.com.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing. My near vision has improved, and I can read small print from 8 inches. My overall vision is clearer, and the glare from oncoming headlights doesn't bother me any longer. Just 1 to 2 drops a day, and the results are visible. You can find CanSee eye drops at wisechoicemedicine.net or call 800-861-4936. That's 800-861-4936. 601-491-4936. WiseChoiceMedicine.net. CanSee Eye Drops. The name says it all.
When you take real performance-enhancing supplements, your body is placed under a lot of stress. Your organs need support. If you had to take a supplement for each of the potential side effects, estrogen conversion, blood pressure, liver protection, cholesterol control, water retention, androgen receptor upregulation, kidney function, and much more, you'd have to break the bank just to pay for it all. That's until Need to Build Muscles N2 Guard. N2 Guard does all of this and more. It's the only real cycle support supplement that you'll ever need. Look, if your organs are important to you, buy N2 Guard today at needtobuildmuscle.com.
All of your favorite supplements are waiting for you at the best prices and fastest customer service at orbitnutrition.com. Even some of the more popular supplements advertised right here on Superhuman Radio. They carry All-American EFX, LG Sciences, and Primordial Performance products at the best prices on the net. Visit orbitnutrition.com today and check out their complete line. Give them a chance to fill your order. You won't be disappointed. Orbitnutrition.com. The best supplements in the universe are at orbitnutrition.com.
From the most advanced supplement company on the planet, Primordial Performance, comes the new Andro series. Andro Lean is a thermogenic aid that will promote lipolysis and incinerate body fat. Andro Mass creates explosive gains and is highly anabolic. Andro Hard will turn your muscles into granite hard stone while increasing sex drive and maximizing strength. The Andro series represents the most advanced delivery systems available anywhere. These are non-methylated and completely liver safe and non-toxic. Buy one or stack all of the new Andro series products today at primordialperformance.com.
Jumping higher, lifting more. It's Superhuman Radio.
What's happening?
What's happening?
Hey, hey, now ladies and gentlemen.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. My guest this hour, Stephanie Seneff. We're talking about cholesterol and statin drugs. Okay, so Stephanie, the next thing that people will always say that have been convinced by the pharmaceutical agenda and the medical orthodoxy, they'll say, but statin drugs prevent heart attack. What do you say? What do you say about that?
Okay, well, I would say that they are sort of right, because there have been some studies that have shown that when they carefully select a population of men in their 50s who have a very low chance of getting a heart attack in the first place, and then they can do the fair placebo-controlled studies, and they can show, you know, something like a 30% decrease in the number of heart attacks. This is a 30% relative decrease in the number of heart attacks in those people. What that translates into for them is, if you took 60 men in their 50s and you gave them all statins for 5 years, one of them would not have a heart attack that he would otherwise have had.
Right.
All of them will suffer from severe side effects from those statins, which will accumulate and get worse over time.
Right. Which people don't realize this, but statin drugs can precipitate heart failure because of the reduction in coenzyme Q10 in the heart.
I can give you three reasons, actually.
Go ahead.
One is coenzyme Q10. Of course, that is essential for the mitochondria, which generate the energy that drives the heart pumping.
Right.
The second one is ion leaks, and people don't appreciate this, but cholesterol protects the cell membrane from ion leaks, and the cell needs to hold its voltage charge in order to be able to do to contract. And small ions leak across the membrane when it doesn't have enough cholesterol. And in fact, it's been shown that statins increase the activity of this pump that's pulling the ions back on the right side of the fence. These are things like sodium, potassium. When they leak out, then the cell has to spend extra work keeping them on the other side. And this is work they can't afford to spend because they have mitochondria that are damaged. The third thing, and I think this one is very important, is that the contractions actually take place through something called calcium sparks.
Right.
And these sparks are initiated at places on the membrane called lipid rafts. They're in these cavioli, they're in these like little caves inside these lipid rafts. The lipid rafts are very important specialized regions of the cell membrane that have 4 to 5 times the amount of cholesterol as the normal part of the cell membrane. So the cholesterol gathers in these lipid rafts, and then it allows these ions, calcium, to rush through, which then creates the calcium spark that then creates the contraction. So because they have depleted cholesterol in the membrane, they're going to have fewer of these cavioli and therefore reduced calcium sparks. So this is three different ways in which the heart is going to have a hard time keeping the pumping going on statins.
Okay. Now, what about those who say that their doctor said that if their cholesterol is above 220, which now is the new modified number, right? Or has it been 180? I know they're trying.
I think it's even come down to 180.
Okay. So if their cholesterol is above 180, that they're at greater risk of developing atherosclerosis.
Oh, that's a surprise. I mean, I actually think that statins cause atherosclerosis. I mean,
really?
Wait, say this again. You said atherosclerosis.
Yeah, atherosclerosis.
I got
mixed
up.
That's what I
No, it's true that there's a correlation between high LDL, but it's not because of the cholesterol. The cholesterol is not the problem.
You know, the analogy I always gave on the show was this. If you had a wall and I punched a hole in it and then you spackled it, did the spackle cause the problem or did me punching the hole cause the problem? And of course it's me punching the hole. Well, there are mechanisms at work that damage the arterial wall and the plaque and calcium kind of get caught up like spackle into that crack. So is the answer to keep the spackle out? No, the answer is to keep the wall from being punched in the first place or the arterial wall being scraped and damaged in the first place, which addresses inflammation, which addresses the inflammatory process, which also comes back to the ultra small LDL, which seems to be able to get underneath and this is where the problem starts. So,
well, I need to know. Let me just tell you something about my thoughts on that, because I have quite a unique theory about what atherosclerosis is about.
Okay, go.
And it really has to do with these proteoglycans that are in the cell wall, these sulfated proteoglycans. Those are the things. These are like the extracellular matrix proteins, and they attract the LDL into the wall. And then oxidation happens, and the LDL gets taken up by the macrophages that have also been brought into the wall. And as I mentioned, the macrophages, they have a job to do. They take in the small, dense LDL, they clean it up, and they ship it out to HDL. So they are actually improving your numbers. Those macrophages that are in the artery wall are raising your HDL and lowering your LDL. They're good guys. I mean, I think that's a very interesting point. Now, they send the cholesterol into the HDL, HDL-A1 in particular, and then there are platelets there. And the platelets also have a job to do. They take in the A1 HDL, and they convert it to cholesterol. They release cholesterol sulfate. And this is known. In fact, they will only take HDL-A1. All the different LDL-HDL guys that are out there, the only one they will accept to make cholesterol sulfate is HDL-A1, which is what the macrophages deliver to them. So the platelets need the macrophages to make the cholesterol sulfate, and the cholesterol sulfate is incredibly important for the heart's health. And now you need to ask the question, why isn't somebody else making that cholesterol sulfate? Because that's what should be happening. Somebody's sleeping on the job, and therefore the plaque has to take on that task.
Interesting.
And I can tell you who's sleeping on the job.
Who's sleeping on the job?
The skin.
The skin?
The skin, yep.
The outer membrane of our body skin?
Yeah, well, in fact, it's basically the surface of the body is not getting enough sunlight, and also the body has too little sulfur and too little cholesterol. So it's three problems.
Okay.
Cholesterol, sulfur, and sunlight deficiency.
Now, where do we get our sulfur? And I like to take Epsom salt baths, which is potassium sulfate, so that's got sulfur in it, right?
I do too. I think it's a great therapeutic thing to do.
Yeah.
And that is going to let sulfur absorb right through, sulfate in fact, which is exactly what you need to absorb right through the skin. That is a really great thing to do.
So that's what, now, and obviously I talk about being sun phobic and the importance of naturally produced vitamin D in the body, but sometimes you have to supplement for those people for whatever reason can't get out in the sun. Now, coming back to cholesterol for a second, I eat a very high cholesterol diet. I on average eat at least a half a dozen whole eggs a day, but these are farm fresh, you know, pastured chicken eggs, and quite often fertile chicken eggs, because they're produced in the presence of a rooster. And so what would you say to people who eat high cholesterol diets like me?
Eggs are a fantastic health food. They are like one of the best things. And I'll tell you, they contain, cholesterol is good for you, and they contain cholesterol, as you've said. They also contain good fats, healthy fats, and as you said also, healthy eggs from healthy chickens. They contain choline, which is another element that is overlooked. It's an essential nutrient, very, very important for actually for methylating DNA, which is going to protect it from cancer, and also for producing a substance called sphingomyelin, which is incredibly important for the myelin sheath in the brain to protect you from things like multiple sclerosis.
Right.
And also plays a very important role in protecting the LDL. So if you don't have enough sphingomyelin, you're not going to be able to protect your LDL from damage. And you get that from choline, and choline is only found in association with foods that are high in cholesterol.
Wow.
Then there's also zinc and iron and, of course, vitamin A, vitamin D, the B vitamins. I mean, incredible nutrients associated with the egg. And the egg is also a very inexpensive product. It's a great food.
Yeah, no, I love eggs. And I buy 8 to 10 dozen at a time from my farmer and go through them as quickly as I can. All right, so now I'm sure that you're confronted with this question, but people are taking statin drugs. Are they getting heart attacks while they're taking statin drugs?
They are.
Right. And, yes. And are people who take statin drugs getting heart attacks at a lower rate than the general population, in your opinion?
You know, I don't know. I don't know that.
I've read that they're not. I've actually read that people who take statin drugs have a same heart attack risk as people, as the general untreated population. Now,
the other thing that I'm aware of is that statins don't do nearly as well. As you get older, their effectiveness goes down in terms of preventing heart attacks. But worse than that, and I really should tell you this story about, there's an article that I read very recently. It was just published in 2011. In the Annals of Medicine by a guy named Tilmis, T-I-L-M-I-S.
Okay.
And he did a 17-year study of elderly people who were over 70 years old in 1990. That's when he started the study. So he's been monitoring these people for 17 years, about 600 people. And he did very careful analysis, interviewing them and sending them through tests to measure their two things. He measured an index of frailty and an index of mental decline. But he also measured three things related to cholesterol: blood levels of cholesterol, the ability to synthesize cholesterol, and the ability to absorb cholesterol through the gut. He measured those three things. And he found an exact inverse relationship. So the lower your cholesterol, the lower each one of these three parameters is, the worse off you are in terms of frailty and mental decline. And this makes sense because cholesterol is basically, I mean, it's the key thing that distinguishes animals from plants. It's what gives us mobility, and it's what gives us a nervous system. So when you have low cholesterol, your mobility and your nervous system are going to fall apart.
Right.
And so synthesis of cholesterol was actually the strongest predictor. Inability to synthesize cholesterol was the strongest predictor of frailty, increased frailty, and increased mental decline.
We're talking about liver function at that point, Tom, aren't we? I mean, the cholesterol.
Frailty, well, that's muscles. You know, your muscles become weak, and you.
I'm saying the ability to synthesize cholesterol is a function
of the
liver.
That's the liver. Yes, the liver has a major responsibility to synthesize cholesterol, and it gets clobbered in that. Now, I wanted to get back to statins. You were going to ask how do they protect, and I wanted to say a little bit of a story that I've figured out. I think may be true. It's a theory that I have about a benefit that statins might offer. It's a very backhanded benefit because in the process they end up destroying the muscles, the skeletal muscles.
Right.
So what happens is that the statins interfere with the liver's ability to make cholesterol.
Right.
And this means the liver can no longer take care of cleaning out the fructose that's damaging to the blood. It usually would grab that fructose and turn it into fat as quickly as possible. It can no longer do that because it doesn't have cholesterol to wrap that fat up. It cannot safely store that fat, so it won't even go near the fructose. So as a consequence, the muscle cells become heroic, and they take in the fructose, and they process it anaerobically, and they convert it into lactate. And in fact, these muscle fibers that are involved with anaerobic glucose and, you know, sugar metabolism are the ones that get the most damaged by the statin drugs.
Wow.
And furthermore, lactate shows up in the blood of people who take statin drugs.
Right.
So this is a great service that they've done because lactate is a much, much safer fuel than fructose.
Interesting.
So the muscles are being heroes by converting the fructose into lactate. The heart loves lactate, and so does the liver. Both of them are happy to eat the lactate.
Right.
And that's keeping them healthy. It's the muscles that are keeping them healthy, only until the muscles get completely destroyed.
And they're going to get destroyed because of the lack of cholesterol.
That's right.
You're not going to have myocyte biosynthesis. You're going to have downregulation of muscle fiber growth and repair.
That's
right. And the muscles will just deteriorate over time.
Yes, that's right. And in fact, I have, with my students, we've been conducting a study on, this is great, on the web we've been able to find, like, you know, there's lots and lots of these reviews that are posted by people who are experiencing side effects with drugs.
Right.
And so these are people who had side effects with statin drugs. They wrote their story in these web pages like WebMD and Ask a Patient. These are places you can find on the web. We gathered 8,400 of these reviews from statin takers. And we also gathered an equal number, 8,400, of reviews from people taking all kinds of other drugs. And these two sets of reviews were age-matched. So we found the right number of reviews in this other set that matched them. So we had the same age distribution over the two sets of reviews. And then we just looked at statistics on words, word frequencies and phrase frequencies that were associated with different side effects. And we found some really remarkable things. We're actually building a database now that people will be able to talk to and interact with on the web. We're going to post that It's not quite ready yet, but I'm going to post it on my website when it is. I would love it for people to try it out.
Okay, look, here's what I want to do. We've gone over a little bit. I want to take a break. When we come back, I want you to just give me a top-line summary of what you found when you did this meta-analysis, basically.
That's right. I will do that.
So we're talking with Stephanie Seneff. We're talking about statin drugs and cholesterol. You're listening to Superhuman Radio. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Thousands of Superhuman Radio listeners already know how well GLC 2000 works at repairing joints and cartilage, and it's the best price on the market, milligram for milligram. Now GLC Direct is offering a special that my listeners can take advantage of. Buy one, get one free of any GLC 2000 product. That's right. Buy one of your favorite GLC 2000 products and get one free. Capsules or raw powder. Just mention Superhuman Radio and buy one, get one free today. Call 866-452-3473 or click the GLC banner ad on superhumanradio.com. Offer limited to one per household. Finally, a bovine supplement right from the source used in the original study. Phytoserms 347 is here. Bovine natalensis has been shown to dramatically increase testosterone levels in clinical research, but sourcing the real ingredient has proven near impossible. Now, Ruthless Supplements has done the impossible. Each capsule of Phytoserms 347 has the exact amount of pure Prolensis TM bovine natalensis required to produce a dramatic increase in total and free testosterone. You can't get this anywhere else but at Ruthless Supplements. Visit rlssupplements.com today.
Hey, this is Carl. You know, quite often you're forced to choose between price and quality when it comes to purchasing peptides for research purposes. But you don't have to do that any longer, because now there's opresource.net. At OP Resource, you will find the finest authentic peptides available anywhere at the best prices available anywhere. I only trust my research to opresource.net, and you should too. Check them out today. opresource.net.
Testosterone is the king of anabolic hormones, and Test Charge is unlike any testosterone amplifier you have ever tried, because only Test Charge has taxadrol, a substance that grows in only one place in the world and is only found in Test Charge. Test Charge will jack your testosterone levels like illegal agents, but rest assured, there are no banned substances in Test Charge. Test Charge is the secret weapon used by IFBB legend Flex Wheeler. And now you can join the pro ranks. Go to AAEFX.com to learn more about where you can find Test Charge today.
The fourth most abundant mineral in the body, magnesium, is responsible for 300 biochemical reactions. Normal muscle and nerve function, proper heart rhythm, healthy immune system, and proper hormone levels. But most find taking oral magnesium problematic. Get optimum magnesium levels with transdermal magnesium oil from MikeMahler.com. Magnesium absorbed through the skin can elevate DHEA levels and a variety of other reactions that can increase energy, reduce muscle soreness, lose stomach fat, and ramp up heart health. Go to MikeMahler.com today. That's Mike, MahLer.com.
Protein is the building block of muscle. Protein-rich diets have been shown to not only be heart healthy, but also burn body fat through the thermogenic effect of protein in the digestive process. But getting enough protein each day isn't easy. That's why I use True Protein from TrueProtein.com. TrueProtein.com has an incredible variety of flavors. My favorite is chocolate coconut. And you can even create your own custom blend. Mix whey, casein, and egg, or throw in a little beef isolate. And you can save 5% off the already low, low price when you use the coupon code SHRADIO. Visit TrueProtein.com today and let them know Carl sent you.
Your radio just got ripped. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. My guest this hour is Stephanie Seneff. We're talking about cholesterol and statin drugs, the myth, the cholesterol myth. You know, the University of Hawaii produced a study that doctors failed to even acknowledge that showed that the oldest adults with the highest cholesterol levels lived the longest and were the most robust. But no one pays attention to that one, that's for sure. All right, so Stephanie, what were the commonalities that you started to see in the plaintiff symptoms from people who were taking statin drugs?
So, yeah, so what we could do is we could just do some mathematics to compute the likelihood that the distribution we saw would occur by chance. And this is something with, they always say 0.05, p-value is the significant level breakoff. So anything less than 0.05 is significant. And you can compute this from just looking at how often do the words show up in the statin drug reviews versus the reviews for all the other drugs. And this is not just drugs that treat cholesterol, but drugs that treat anything. So it's a wide swath of different drugs, people writing side effects reports on those. And we found a very interesting set of things that we would have expected, too, from having read the literature. These things have been showing up. Obviously, the muscle problems. And when we look at words and phrases related to muscle problems in the two sets of drugs, we find the p-value is 0.0000001, which means, of course, that it's incredibly true that statins cause muscle problems. That's right. The one thing they really clearly cause.
Right.
And the industry admits that.
Right.
Now, if you look at something like mobility, the ability to get around, which is sort of severe muscle problems, or problems feeding the muscle,
right.
That's got a p-value of 0.0005. So that's pretty good, you know.
Right.
That's a very, very small likelihood of being an accident, you know.
Right.
That observation. Memory problems, you know, is something else that people talk about with statins, and that one came out as 0.008. So 0.05 is significance. 0.008 is quite a bit below that.
Right.
And liver problems is 0.002, and diabetes is an interesting one. That comes out as 0.006. And I've read a couple of articles now that say statins cause diabetes. And I think this Jupiter trial, people are suspicious that they, you know, the Jupiter trial that was cut short.
Right.
That had the C-reactive protein is another reason to take statins. There's a suspicion it was cut short because it was showing diabetes and it was about to become statistically significant.
So I wonder what mechanism, what pathway statin drugs could precipitate insulin resistance. That's interesting.
I can tell you how.
Okay, go ahead.
And it has to do with depleting the cholesterol in the muscle cells.
Oh, sure, because your muscles are metabolic currency. They're the only things that predictably burn calories, and insulin sensitivity is of paramount importance in muscle.
Right, and the muscles are the ones that are really the signature of the insulin sensitivity.
Right.
And when they get reduced cholesterol in their cell membranes, they can't create as many lipid rafts, the same thing that I mentioned with the heart.
Muscle, right.
And the lipid rafts are the place where the glucose enters. It has to enter through the lipid raft. That's a safe entry passage, and it needs the cholesterol to be safe. And again, glucose is a toxin. You know, it needs to process the glucose anaerobically to get it to the point where it can send off the product, which is acetyl coenzyme A, and sends that off into the mitochondria for the rest of the degradation that leads to carbon dioxide and water.
Right.
So the piece that happens in the mitochondria generates lots of energy, but you can't just throw the glucose at the mitochondria. You have to break it down. And that process is extremely dangerous. But if you localize it in the cavioli in the lipid raft, it's safe. And that's what the muscle wants to do. It's the only place it'll take it in. And so when it doesn't have enough lipid rafts, it's going to reduce the amount of glucose it can take in.
Ah, interesting. Interesting. Okay, so.
Now, another thing I wanted to mention was ALS, which is really interesting, because ALS, as you know, is on the rise. It's a very nasty disease, fatal, no cure. Within usually 5 years after you're diagnosed, you're dead.
Right.
And it cripples you.
Right.
And 10 times as many mentions of ALS in our statin drug reviews compared to the non-statin drug reviews. 10 times, which is highly significant. And then likewise, Parkinson's disease, which is another disease of the nervous system, also highly significantly increased mention of it in our statin drug reviews. So these are really serious diseases that I think statins are causing. And then, of course, also you mentioned heart failure, and I agree with you on that. They're causing heart failure, and heart failure is also on the rise. I read that a statistic from 1997 that said that the heart failure rate had doubled between 1989 and 1997, and statins were first introduced in 1987. So it feels to me like there's a good correlation there with the increase in heart failure related to the statin, introduction of the statins.
Now, I happen to know, I don't have any special knowledge, but I've been watching the research on statin drugs. And I happen to know that the industries, the companies that make most of their money on statin drugs, have been trying to repurpose their statin drugs, because I think they're starting to see the writing on the wall. They're starting to see that heart attack rate does not decrease when statin therapy is employed. And all of the side effects of statin drugs are now starting to reach a critical mass or groundswell where it can no longer be ignored now that the mass population is on statin drugs. So their position, they're going, you know, statin drugs also have an anti-inflammatory benefit, and statin
right.
drugs may also be good for this. And they're already repositioning because they feel like we've got this drug. We have to find someplace else to sell it, because pretty soon we're not going to be able to sell it for the reason we are today. So what happens? I mean, can't we just stop these companies from selling these drugs? Can't we?
I know. It's horrible, isn't it? I wish, it just amazes me that they're even still on the market, because I really believe they're doing, I think the statin drug is going to go down in history as the worst disaster in the history of all the drugs that have been created, beyond thalidomide and Vioxx and hormone replacement therapy. I think it's going to turn out.
Well,
to be
I have to take issue with your claim on hormone replacement therapy. Turned out to be a bad idea when we used pharmaceutical hormone replacement therapy, which was methylated hormones, which changed the landscape of the liver.
But I would believe
increase,
that.
Increasing thrombosis. Yeah, I mean, when you use bioidentical hormones that are not oral, when they, conjugated equine estrogens and progestins that are traditionally offered and were used in the women's initiative, were the only drugs that were studied. These have the same side effects as birth control pills and oral corticosteroids, which is that the methylation process challenges the liver and causes such a high degree of hepatic stress that it increases thrombosis, it increases inflammation, it increases all sorts of nasty things that are independent of the hormone that they are attached to. So,
well, that's very interesting.
When you look at the women's initiative, women lost on the women's initiative because hormone replacement therapy is a great benefit to women when they use injectable oil-based hormones, or when they use transdermal hormones, or even the pellets, which are becoming very, very popular now. But once you methylate that hormone so that it survives first pass liver degradation, you cause a myriad of problems for the liver that are independent of the hormone. They're because of the methylation process. So
well, that's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, that's the only thing I did read about yours. I said, I wish she wouldn't say that because.
Well, I would replace it with Vioxx then.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a baby and bathwater thing. I mean, hormone replacement therapy has great value. Women develop a Parkinson's disease at a similar rate to men once they go through menopause. We know that estradiol is protective of the brain through FAF, fibroblast activation factor, which is an anti-inflammatory response mechanism that estradiol docks in every cell and can reduce inflammation and damage. But when women go through menopause, obviously they don't have lots of estradiol unless they're obese, and then they have unhealthy levels of estradiol. But quite often, this is when they develop neurological disorders that coincide with the passage of menopause. And so when doctors go, well, here, we're going to put you on equine estrogen that is methylated, they're giving them a foreign 16 forms of estrogen that horses produce as opposed to 3 that humans produce. They're giving them 16 forms of estrogen plus it's methylated. Sure, there's problems with it.
Right.
So,
by the way, I want to get back to the sulfur because I think that's a really important point.
Go ahead.
I want to especially mention places that have low incidence of heart disease. Are one thing is they have a lot of sunlight, and the second thing is they have a lot of sulfur. And this is very clear to me. And you look at Iceland, you look at Crete, you look at Japan, and Greece and Italy, all of these places have low heart disease, and they have high sulfur because they have basaltic soils.
How are they getting their sulfur?
From the basalt in the mountains, in the volcanic.
The activity. Ash, sure.
Yeah, the volcanism gives them sulfur, and I think it's even just sulfur in the drinking water. It could be as simple as that, or
you know what's amazing?
Available to the plants.
We've been trying to identify the French paradox, the Italian paradox.
I know.
And it may be what you just said. It could just be that they have a greater degree to sulfur than we do.
I think so. I think sulfur is absolutely essential, and sulfur is what you use to make the sulfate in the skin. And the sulfate is made in the skin upon exposure to sunlight.
Where can we get sulfur? Where can we get sulfur from to supplement?
So in eating it, eggs are actually an excellent source of sulfur.
Really?
Yes. And then in terms of vegetables, onions and garlic and horseradish are good sources.
The sulfur in eggs, is it denatured or destroyed during cooking? Or is it something like, I like my eggs yolk up.
No, it's fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's good to know. So, and then obviously Epsom salt baths or... I even like to go to, there's a place in Indiana where they have Pluto water baths, which is very high in sulfur. It stinks so bad that they call it stinky water. And you go up there and you bathe in it for 20 minutes and your body absorbs all those minerals, including a lot of sulfur.
Yeah, sulfate, in fact, which is what you really need. Sulfate is actually, I think, kind of a miracle molecule.
Really?
It's amazing. And in fact, when it travels with cholesterol, the interesting thing is that cholesterol, of course, is not water soluble, so it has to be packaged up inside a particle like LDL to get shipped through the blood. But cholesterol sulfate actually can just flow freely through the blood. It's water soluble. And it's the sulfate that makes it water soluble.
Interesting.
It doesn't have to be packaged up. And then it can also it enters cell walls 10 times more efficiently than cholesterol. So it very easily goes into the cells and provides them with cholesterol. But it's also providing them with sulfate. And they need sulfur. Sulfur is actually very important to protect you from radiation damage. It's
really
incredibly good at that. Yeah.
Wow.
And furthermore, sulfate is really good for breaking down glucose safely. And that prevents all these byproducts that I mentioned earlier.
So we need to make sure that we're getting enough sulfur. How much sulfur do we need in our diet if we're getting it orally?
Well, that's very interesting. And in fact, I think that's a part of the problem because sulfur does not have a minimum daily requirement. No one has bothered to come up with a minimum daily requirement. And as a consequence, you know, sugars, they put in all the minimum daily requirement of every vitamin and mineral you can think of. They leave out sulfur because it doesn't have a minimum daily requirement.
Can you have too much sulfur? If you have too much sulfur, do you start to smell like
I
sulfur?
I have not heard of anything regarding overdose of sulfur.
I'm going to have to look into this. This could be another show entirely. Okay, let's take our last commercial break, Stephanie. When we come back, we'll wrap up the interview. We're talking with Stephanie Seneff. We'll tell you how you can reach her, her website, and so on and so forth when we come back.
Pre-workout products crank you up, then leave you flat and fatigued. Except now, you're strung out from being overstimulated, hungry because it destroyed your appetite, and in a catabolic state because you can't eat for recovery and growth. That's why you need to get Lit Up from Applied Nutraceuticals. Lit Up is an original blend, not a copycat formula here. Lit Up delivers the perfect amount of energy, focus, pump, and intensity without feeling strung out or a loss of appetite for hours after your workout. Plus, Lit Up creates an anabolic environment by jacking testosterone levels through the roof. Get Lit Up today at appnut.com.
Sissies may want to stop listening now. Super DMZ is the most powerful legal compound available on the market today, bar none. Super DMZ will give you lean muscle and strength gains at comparable rates to the anabolic steroid Dianabol with none of the water retention or bloat. Super DMZ contains Superdrol dimethazine, not to be confused with other Superdrol knockoffs. Get Super DMZ while supplies last at ironmaglabs.com. Don't wait too long because Super DMZ is sure to be added to the government ban list. Go to ironmaglabs.com today.
That's the sound of 37 dumbbells. That's a lot of weight and a lot of wasted space when you can get the same thing done with just one set of power blocks. The new, quieter, urethane series power blocks with FlexPin technology are the heaviest and easiest to use quick-change dumbbells on the market. Starting at just $149 a pair, power blocks can grow as your strength grows, all the way up to 130 pounds per dumbbell. Imagine a whole rack of dumbbells in the space of just one pair with power blocks. Go to powerblock.com today or call 800-651-1937. Power Block, the world's best dumbbell.
Muscle-building magic happens when you put the right stack together. Iron Mag Labs takes the guesswork out of stacking with Methadrol Extreme. Methadrol Extreme combines three of the most powerful legal anabolics in the world, dimethazine, Superdrol, and Decadrol. The combination of these three agents will ratchet up strength while packing on slabs of muscle and dissolving fat. Don't wait too long because Methadrol Extreme will only be available for a limited time and is sure to disappear quickly. Go to ironmaglabs.com today and get your bottle of Methadrol Extreme.
If you want to be superhuman, you can't eat junk. Finally, there's a protein bar that isn't just candy in disguise. Quest protein bars have 20 grams of protein, 4 to 5 grams of non-fiber carbs, and the only bars on the market with no sugar or sugar alcohols. I've never promoted a protein bar before, but these are delicious and unlike any other protein bars you've ever tried before. They're so good that Quest Nutrition is giving away 2 free bars to all my listeners, even free shipping. Go to superhumanradio.com right now and click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad to try them today.
I've never felt a pump from taking a supplement. That's until I tried creatine nitrate from APS Nutrition. I expected to feel nothing, just like the NO supplements I had taken before. But this stuff really does work. Even taking below the recommended dose, I could feel the sensation of tighter muscles under the swelling effect of the pump. And the pump lasts for a few hours. It worked for me and I was a skeptic. Check out creatine nitrate by visiting APSNutrition.com today. Try it and you'll be a believer too.
Listen strong. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. My guest this hour is Stephanie Seneff. So, Stephanie, we covered a lot of good information today, and a lot of this stuff is reiterated over and over again, but it can't be said often enough because we're bombarded daily, actually by the second, by statin drug commercials proposing that, you know, I wouldn't have had this heart attack had I listened to my doctor. Exercise and nutrition weren't enough, which is total BS. You know, and you should really talk to your doctor about this statin drug today.
Oh, I hate it.
Oh, it you know, they play on people's fears. It's disgusting. It's just so disgusting. And so what do you want people to take away from your interview? What is the crystallized message that you want to produce here?
I would like to tell people what's the better, much better way to live a long and healthy life. And it really has to do with both nutrition and, as I said, sun exposure. And if you get the right nutrition, sun exposure will not be damaging to your skin. People are so afraid of getting skin cancer, and they shouldn't be. Because if you have enough cholesterol, enough sulfur in your skin knows how to handle the sun and actually handles it very well by creating sulfate in order to protect you from the radiation damage. So it's doing two good things with the sulfur. So obviously you need to get enough sulfur. And so for me, a healthy diet means eating foods that are rich in cholesterol and sulfur and avoiding processed foods. This is a very important point. The processed foods, when you start doing chemical processing, you're introducing God knows what. And you know about the trans fats fiasco. And
right.
Trans fats are very similar to the methylglyoxal. These are things that are happening because the food is being processed unnaturally. And this makes it very toxic to your health. And, of course, sugar and flour and all these sort of empty carbs types of things, they rush into your blood as glucose, fructose, and this methylglyoxal, and they do a lot of damage. So you, and if you eat your foods with fat, you cannot, I don't think you can get too many fats. And we didn't get into that as much, but I eat a very high-fat diet.
Yeah, and so does my whole audience does. We are believers. I mean, I literally eat coconut oil out
right.
of the jar.
Coconut is extremely healthy, and I'm sure you've talked about it being good for Alzheimer's, but it's an extremely
healthy. It's good for everything.
Food.
It's good for everything.
Yeah.
It's so good.
And then the other thing I wanted to mention was lactate, and I mentioned to you about how the muscles convert the bad stuff into lactate, and lactate is a very healthy fuel. Well, you can actually get lactate a lot more easily by eating sour cream or yogurt or sourdough bread. All of these things are based on, or even beer. I mean, this is an anaerobic metabolism done by bacteria safely. That's because it's a biological system. And it produces lactate from something that was difficult for your body. It turns it into something that's very easy.
So the bitter things, like kefir, wouldn't be another one, I would imagine, right?
Yeah, bitter is probably good, although I don't have the explanation for that. But from my scientific studies, the lactate is a really excellent fuel for your body. It's very safe.
Interesting.
And so that's a good thing to try to eat as well.
Okay. And
I wanted to tell a little story about the sulfur because it's very interesting. When you look at Greece, there's I should mention the Thinx webpage. I don't know if you've probably talked about Thinx.
No, I haven't.
The International Network of Cholesterol Skeptics. And this is Uffe Ravenskov. I think he should win the Nobel Prize. He has been fighting the statin industry for probably 30 or 40 years now. I mean, ever since it came out, he's been saying cholesterol is good. And he has this website, Thinx, and he has a whole bunch of people listed on there. I'm one of them. And I actually met many other people on Thinx through Thinx. We've established relationships and we've been developing ideas jointly. It's just been a wonderful experience through the web. And I would like to also put in a plug for Tim Berners-Lee, who is the inventor of the World Wide Web. And I think this has really allowed people like me to just go out there and find all this literature. I've read hundreds of peer-reviewed research articles at this point. And it's all available on the web. It's so easy to do research and to learn all about this stuff for yourself, you know?
Right.
It's so available to everybody because of computer science, which is my field. So I'm proud of my field from that standpoint.
Yeah, absolutely.
Really opened doors for me.
Yeah. But let's tell me the story about sulfur real quick.
Okay, yes, I was going to say about Greece because Crete is the place that's famous for having very low heart disease.
Right.
And very low obesity. It's a really healthy place to be. And therefore they talk about the Greek diet, you know, the Mediterranean diet. There's another island in Greece called Koptos, and Koptos is on the northwest shore. And Crete and Koptos have the same climate, basically, the same diet, basically, and very, very different rates of heart disease, five times as much in Koptos compared to Crete.
Okay.
And the difference is the geology. Crete sits right on top of the mid-crest rift valley of the ocean, just like Iceland is basically an emergent piece of the Ridgecrest in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean. Crete is the same thing with respect to the Mediterranean Sea. And those things have lots and lots of sulfur in that rift crest. It's all, you know, Iceland's had all this volcanism recently.
Right.
And Crete is similar. It has a lot of basalt rock. Whereas Koptos is on top of the summit of a limestone mountain. So it's all limestone and no sulfur.
Interesting.
And I think sulfur is the difference there. So sulfur is really, really important.
Are there any regions of the United States that are higher in sulfur than others?
Oregon, for example, has the very lowest obesity problem in the country, in the children. And it's got all those volcanoes, you know, Mount St. Helens.
That's right. That's right.
Yep. And Hawaii also has very good rates. It also has a lot of volcanoes and very good obesity and heart disease rates. But Hawaii recently has been coming down. I mean, the children are starting to get fat in Hawaii.
Well, but they've
been opening up Walmarts.
They've embraced the Western diet.
They're eating Walmarts, and Walmarts is coming in from elsewhere, so they're not getting the sulfur advantage anymore.
Yeah.
In Hawaii.
Yeah.
Which is very sad.
Interesting. So people need to focus on trying to get more sulfur in their diet, it sounds like.
I think so. That's the message I would like to emphasize because it's a novel message that most people aren't aware of.
Yeah, I like it. I like it a lot. All right, so let's talk about a couple other things. You are doing a public speaking opportunity with the Weston A. Price Foundation. Is that correct?
That's right. Uh-huh.
When is that?
That's going to be in November, November 11th, actually. Veterans Day, is that?
Oh, okay.
And that'll be a full-day affair. Last year, I went to their event, and it was just a wonderful experience for me. I really admired them, what they're doing, and the talks were very interesting. And, of course, everybody embraced the same point of view that I have. And then they serve the food. They take over the kitchen of the hotel, and they serve the food that advertises their message of how to eat. So it's beautifully done. You really take home the message by eating the food.
Are you the sole public speaker there, or they have several?
No, speakers? They have a whole bunch of talks, parallel sessions. I'm one speaker for a whole day.
So how long? So it's over the course of a weekend, in other words?
It's Friday, Saturday, Sunday, I believe, and I'm on Friday.
That is very cool. And so if people want to attend that.
And they can also buy it, I think, afterwards she distributes, video.
Okay. If people want to attend that, how do they go about attending it?
I would say just look up Weston Price Foundation.
Yeah, it's actually WestonAPrice.org. Right, .org.
.org. Oh, okay, great. Yeah. Yeah, I didn't have the specific.
Yeah, so that's there, November. So if you want to hear Stephanie Seneff speak in person, you have questions for her and so on. Now, you have a website.
And I also should mention Jimmy Moore. He's actually invited me to give a talk, to do a webcam for him.
Who's Jimmy Moore?
So he's living La Vida, low-carb diet. You should know him.
Oh, I think I've heard of his book.
He's got a couple books, actually.
Yeah. I do know
embraces
he is.
Okay. He lost a ton of weight, and he embraces the idea of eating an extremely high-fat diet.
Yeah. Well, we all do. Anybody who has any sensibility about this and looks at history as opposed to just current recommendations knows that their great-grandparents were eating bacon fried in lard.
Absolutely. you know, liver. When I was a kid, liver was something that they told parents they should feed it to their kids once a week.
Right.
And now you can't even find liver at the grocery store.
Well, I won't. There's a bigger issue with liver, and I said this to Sally, and Sally said, "Well, any liver is good liver." But my opinion is the problem with liver is is a filter, and I don't want to eat commercially grown cow liver.
That's the trouble. Yeah. I know. I agree with you. It's actually very hard to get good liver anymore because the poor cows are so sick from what they're eating.
I get it from my farmer. I buy, and he has beautiful grass-fed cows that he processes, and the liver is it's sweet. In fact, I've eaten some of it raw. So it's very, very good.
That's impressive. I don't think I could handle raw liver.
It doesn't have, and when you cook it, it doesn't have that. When you cook commercially raised liver, it has a smell like the stockyards. If you've ever been to a pig stockyard, you know what I'm talking about. It has this very strong, pungent smell.
I do. I think that's actually an indication that the animals are not being treated properly.
Well, I just had this discussion. The first hour I had Marion Nessel on about pet food politics. She's a Times best-selling author, and I made the comment to her that, you know, I think that feeding animals improperly is further reaching than just the animal's health. The people who eat the animals
absolutely
are challenged.
The case.
But she didn't.
Absolutely.
She has a more traditional.
Just the poor animal, right?
Well, not only that, but she has a more traditional dietitian's background. Uh-huh. You know, balanced diet, fruits and vegetables, and so on, and. I am more of like a Weston A. Price follower. I'm more of a native nutritionist. I think that we have to eat ancestral diets in order to stay healthy.
I agree with you.
But you know, it was interesting. I feel like if you eat a sick animal, you're not getting what you need. You're getting something you don't need.
I agree with you there too. I mean, absolutely. They're going to have damage and you're going to eat that damage.
You know, I made a statement for the first 2 years I did this show. I made a statement and then somebody pointed out that I was wrong. I still don't know that I was wrong. I used to say animals in the wild know not to eat a sick animal. I don't mean a wounded animal. I don't mean an animal that's easy prey. I mean an animal that's withering and dying of disease. It's losing
its
fur.
Right.
They could probably
tell from the odor that it was not something they wanted to eat.
Yeah. And someone said to me, that's not true. They do eat sick animals. And I said, prove it.
I have no clue. But it sounds like a plausible idea.
Well, you know what? I mean, I don't think animals will eat sick animals because you usually find sick animals dead in a hole laying on, you know, a roadside somewhere, you know?
Right.
But anyway, I could have been wrong. But my premise is there's no need to eat sick animals if you can find healthy sources.
Yeah,
of food.
I mean, I wish that. I mean, I think it's slowly happening that people are appreciating the value of sort of the small farms, you know. And of course, I didn't talk about milk, but milk is, milk is really healthy.
I've done 100 shows on raw milk.
Okay.
everything from Ron Schmidt right down to raw milk politics. So you know, I'm on raw milk. I'm a big proponent of raw unpasteurized milk. I even have ghee that I use, which is butter from fast growing grass. Cows eat fast growing grass. It has more nutrients in it.
That's absolutely yes. I've learned about that at Western Price.
Yeah, but anyway, listen, Stephanie, I want to thank you so much for making time to come on the show today.
Well, I'm delighted to do so.
Okay,
it's a pleasure.
And we'll have you back again sometime. Okay.
Excellent.
I have to give you a website. I'm going to email this out. If you're a fan of Superhuman Radio and you're on our mailing list, I'm going to email this out. It's people.csal, right?
C-S-A-I-L.
I'm sorry, C-S-A-L. people.csal.mit.edu/SENEFF. You can get all of her articles and information there, okay? There you go.
Great, thank you.
Thanks, Stephanie.
Bye-bye.
And we'll have another great episode for you tomorrow. You're not going to want to miss it. We're going to be talking to Marv Fremiman about positive mental image and how it affects your life. You're not going to want to miss tomorrow's show. We'll see you then.